Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to the Coleman Had a Dream podcast. Christmas has been and gone, our winter break is over, and we are back with a vengeance, ready to talk about some Welsh football ahead of course, some huge games coming up in March, as well as some interesting stuff that's been going on in the time we have been away. I am joined, as always, by Ruth. How are you, Ruth? You're all good?
Doing all right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, indeed. God, I haven't even said that. What a terrible start. Have you got any news, gossip or scandal you would like to share with the group?
Not really. We've just got proper Cascade Mountain snow at the minute. So we're about three feet deep in the snow at the minute, which is lovely.
Excellent. I don't think I would do well 3 feet deep in the snow at the moment. I've only got one foot working, never mind three. I unfortunately broke my I fractured my foot in three places when I was out running. The worst bit is of the story is that I kind of did it. It was a big pothole. I kind of put my foot in the pothole and twisted it, and it was in the car park of a pub called the Captain's Wife that I was running past, like on the seafront. In Sully, and I rang my mum to come and pick me up, like I was 11 years old, not 39, and I said, "Oh, I need you to come and pick me up from the car park of the Captain's Wife," and she was just like, "Are you joking me? It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, you know, I know you like a drink, but I feel like 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm picking you up from the pub's a bit ridiculous." I'm just like, no, I've hurt myself running. She was like, "You must think I'm bloody stupid." I'm just like, "Yeah, I do. Come and pick me up, Nobby." And I got there and I was drenched and everything else, shivering away. And I hopped to the car and she was like, "Oh, I thought you were taking the piss." And I was like, "Oh, cheers for that, pal." So there you go. My mum has absolutely zero faith in me whatsoever.
I have to admit my immediate reaction was that the car park pothole was a story, you know.
I will say 90% of the people I've told the story to, the first question they've asked, was drunk or sober? Which I think says a lot. I've also get a fair bit of abuse. I watched Addo play the other night, and one of the hooligans, I was walking up the stand, one of the ultras at the front of the stand, tried to kick my crutch away as I was walking up the stairs, which was awfully nice of him. A few people called me Terminator at the ground, which I thought was quite funny because I've got this big stupid boot on. But the highlight is one of the kids in school called me a fat RoboCop, which I thought was absolutely lovely stuff. So well done to them. We are here, ladies and gents, not to talk about our ailments, but to talk about Welsh football. We're going to talk about Gemma Granger going. We're going to talk about some of the fringe players around the Wales squad, the C International, which has been announced, and, of course, the Aaron Ramsey dilemma, as I am posing the question to you a little bit later on, Ruth. Let's start with Granger. On a scale of 1 to shocked, how shocked were you?
I think I was at shocked plus. I didn't see this coming at all. I don't think anybody did, really.
No.
I think, you know, there was 3 years on her contract. Not setting things alight as a manager. And we've obviously had our questions, as other people have, about what's been happening with the style of play and issues around bedding in the youngsters and that sort of thing. But I don't think anyone was really expecting it to be a change. And in some respects, I was quite relieved to learn that it sounds like Norway approached her. I think I'd have been more questions about the whole process if she'd have seemed to have been out actively looking for a new role.
Yeah.
And it's 3 years and it's had its ups and downs. But no, I mean, just to answer your fundamental question, I was really shocked.
I mean, same here. The news kind of came out of the blue a little bit, I'd say. And the shock of her leaving, I wasn't that shocked at, actually. It was more that she's gone to Norway. I mean, they're ranked 16th in the world, one of the top 10 European sides. The young girl in the background here seems distraught about the situation. I just feel like, where has this come from? You know, the fact that they approach her is quite interesting. But the one thing I would just say to cast a mild shadow would be that a year ago, the FAW gave her a new contract and very clearly said, you know, we're building to move forward with you. And she kind of took that on, signed the new contract, improved terms, everything that goes with it. And then a year later off she goes. And I'm not criticising her for leaving for Norway. I think it's a perfectly sensible decision. But it's just that leaves a slight bitter taste, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're not the force they were, but with Ada Hegerberg back playing for them now, I realise she's had her injuries along the way and certainly disrupted how involved she was with the World Cup. But I think, you know, there's a consistency to them that puts them at a level above us. They've qualified. They didn't qualify for the very first Euros back in 1984, but they've qualified for every World Cup or Euros since. And that's clearly just a different, as I said, a different level than we're operating at. So on a sort of professional basis, although they're not the strength they were, I can see the attraction for her. I think they're trying to work their way out of a pretty dark place in terms of the relationship between their FA and the women's yeah. team. The fact that Hegerberg has been back playing is sort of manifestation that she at least is more comfortable with what's going on. And I think this might be a way also for them to start with almost a very new slate. They can, you know, they know what they're getting, but Granger doesn't particularly bring baggage as some of the more established international managers might have done. I don't know. It's an interesting choice on their part. I think it's a really interesting choice.
I agree with that. And I think to continue on that theme, it does ask the question a little bit, what do they see that we don't? Obviously, these people know infinitely more than we do about Welsh football. Not Welsh football. But I did think that was quite interesting in terms of what have they seen that we don't. Have we been overly harsh on it? I don't know. I mean, the hide into nothing that we were on in the League A of the Champions League, Nations League, sorry, was always going to be, you know, a tough one, but there were also games in and around that I felt we didn't do particularly well in, so it was just a bit of a strange one all round. But I mean, credit to her, because whilst you're right, they're not the kind of the force they once were, but they're still a good side. And you know, in Hegerberg probably have, you know, the most lethal striker in the world still. They've still got some fantastic players knocking around there, so it's a great opportunity for her. The big question really is that who comes next, Ruth? Have you got any names or profiles or ideas of who you think is the next best fit?
Well, I think the main issue, the main criticism, and in a strange way, I think this might be a blessing in disguise for the FAW. I think an opportunity, although they wouldn't have chosen to do it right now because there's actually quite a lot of turnover in the staff on the women's side of the game. Larry Roberts has obviously resigned as her role of head of women and girls football. And that, you know, that's been a normal kind of resignation process. They've known that's coming. Nothing strange there. And then Gemma Lewis was appointed about, I don't know, maybe about 15 months ago as the first women and girls pathway manager after her very successful time with the New Zealand age groups. And I think whilst bringing in a new manager at this point might have advantages, I don't think the FAW would have looked for this level of disruption at this point in the past. So I think based on what hasn't been working with Granger, I think there's a lot of us that want to see some of those younger players being pulled through more than 2 minutes at the end of a game, and you know, which is seemed to be the pattern a little bit under Granger. I mean, Lauren Smith, I think, would be an ideal candidate, but I can't, and then obviously she said she's not interested, but I can't see any of the WSL, you know, head coaches, managers leaving what they're doing to come and manage Wales. And a few people have kicked around some names from the Women's League over here as well. And again, I can't see anyone leaving the NWSL to come and manage Wales. Where there might be is people that are perhaps at the assistant manager stage and are looking for a step up to have the sort of more head honcho kind of role. Like perhaps there's someone at Chelsea in the mix with Emma Hayes moving, who perhaps doesn't want to follow her to the US. I mean, I know Denise Reddy has worked in the US, so she might be all for coming over here. But, you know, she's got quite a lot of club management experience international. She's been assistant manager with the US under 21s team. You know, someone like that who this might feel like a good next step, an advancement on where they are. So I think we might be looking at that sort of level. And also, I think we need to look at some of the other international managers, you know, who is out of work currently. You know, there's a Dutch lass, Vera Pauw, who's managed internationally for 25 years. She took Ireland to their first World Cup. She's managed Scotland. She's managed the Netherlands, amongst other countries. But she had she was actually sort of blacklisted, I suppose, by the Women's League over here. She managed Houston Dash for a while and was part of that kind of bullying investigation that they did over here into women's sport. And she's actually been banned from managing in the WSL. So I'm not saying the FAW want to go down that route, but there are people like her who have some real international experience that perhaps we can build on.
Well, I just want to jump just to stop you just a second there, just talking about the experience thing. I actually think we'll go the other way. I think we're not looking for someone experienced. I think with experience, which is great to some degree, we've got people kind of set in their ways who know what they want to do. And I think having looked at the application pack thing for the job, it's very clear the words Welsh way are used very often. And I think it's actually the other way around. I think we're more likely to get someone younger. I think the assistant manager shout is not a bad one, but I think we're looking for someone younger who's earlier in their career who can fit what we want rather than some experience who wants to put their mark down. And I think personally that's where we'll go. I think the idea that someone will come in and the one that kind of jumps out for me is in-house, really. I think that's also a cheaper option, which will help, is Matty Jones and Lauren Dykes, who've been involved in the FAW recently, done some coaching work with them in the last few camps. Those are the sorts of things that jump out to me. I wonder whether Neil Taylor might be interested. He's coaching with the FAW. I don't know whether it's too soon for him or whether he wants to move to women's football, but he's been working some of the age groups. Could that be a good opportunity? That's the sort of area I'm looking in, I think, a bit more internal. But in terms of the younger WSL managers, I totally agree with you. I can't see, especially the names you mentioned there, I can't see them leaving.
It might be as well, Dave, that given they've got this gap with Lowry Roberts resigning, and I honestly don't know quite where they've got to with the filling that post. Yeah. But it kind of seems important that whoever has that post is involved with this management appointment. And yet we've got qualifiers starting in April. And obviously these qualifiers are very contained. I think they're over by September.
Yeah.
So it might be that, as you say, you know, Dykes, Taylor, Matty Jones, some sort of combination of people take care of this summer with a view to having a more kind of holistic involvement of the new head of women's and girls development being part of that actual process a bit more. So it wouldn't surprise me if we have to do something, you know, because the first qualifiers are April. It's not that, you know, by the time you get this whole process out, we might not have someone appointed till a few weeks' time, or perhaps even into March. And I think it's a big ask for someone to come in and take over then with qualifiers in April. So wouldn't be surprised if we take our time a little bit, given we've got this unexpected breather, as it were, and have an interim arrangement for this summer qualification period. And if that goes well, then maybe that's your answer. But I don't want us rushing. I think it's a really difficult thing to rush. And particularly mid-season when people, you know, the people that are available are, you know, perhaps available for the wrong reasons this time of year. So I think you need to be mindful of that as well.
No, I think it's a fair point. My only argument to disagree there is that we've got people at the peak of their powers or at the end of their powers, your Fishlocks and Ingles and so on. And I wonder if they don't want to put someone short term in for what could prove to be someone like Jess's final qualifying campaign, if they want to have something longer term there. That would be my only kind of counter to that argument. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. I know that when it was put out last time, that there was a big number of people came forward, applied for the job that Granger eventually got. So I do wonder if, I assume that will be the same, and I'm sure the FAW are hoping for the same. The last thing I want to talk about, Ruth, on this is what she's brought, what her legacy is, if that's the right word. Because at the start, I remember we played Denmark in her first game, I think, or certainly her first home game. And I know we lost the game, but we had a great go. We scored a great goal that day. We performed really, really well. We were combative. We were on the front foot. We were high pressing. And I really thought, wow, like this is what we want. And I wish that is the legacy that she was leaving. I just can't help but feel we've slowly slipped backwards over the last, I don't know, 6 months, let's say, especially with the qualifier and the playoff against Switzerland. And I wonder if maybe the pressure kind of got there and it was just, right, okay, let's kind of cling on to what we've got. And she went for the situation rather than the bigger picture. And I wonder if that kind of hindered her a little bit. But I think it goes to show that the way that we want to play, the way that she wanted us to play ultimately, that ability is still there. And I think that at least it shows that, yes, we can be solid at the back, but we can still go out and be front foot and be adventurous and go after these other teams. And I think that's where we're going to be at our best. So I really hope that is continued in with whoever the next manager is. That I would say that's her legacy, if you like.
No, I would agree with that. I think, like, if we'd have played as we played against Germany in that 0-0, if we'd have played in against the Icelandic girls in a similar way, we might still be in League A. So yeah. I think there's things that are positive. I do feel like we've been on a kind of somewhat a slippery slope over maybe the last 18 months. You know, like there's across her record, across the 3 years, there's been 13 losses. But six of those came in 2023. So there's that kind of trend. And admittedly, that's at least in part because we're playing better opposition. We were in League A, League A of the Nations League. And I think, you know, we've discussed before how we probably are going to be a team on the cusp of A and B for the time being. And you can't deny that we came damn close to at least going to penalties against the Swiss, you know. So I think there are definitely positives. I think there's a sort of professional attitude in the sense of we have to step up and we have to go toe-to-toe with these better teams because that's how we're going to improve. And I don't think we can hide from the better teams. I think that might be a mindset that she's brought that is important. I think where we've struggled is we've kind of lost that defensive solidity that we had without really compensating up front. And I think also with the number of young players we have coming through, I want to see someone who's determined to incorporate them. And I'm not saying that you immediately throw them all in and you change your starting 11, but I think we've seen with a number of managers on the men's side that bringing the younger players in is important because you get them to the point where they've got 20, 25 caps before you really start asking them to do anything where they're responsible for turning a game. And I think we can't ignore that pattern for the women either. I think it's important that players have some experience and some grounding before you expect them to run a match.
I agree. And I've been thinking about looking at how to try and find a comparison in a way, because the best I can do, I think, is Mark Hughes, in that when he came over, he kind of took a squad that was capable of a lot. And he really did better with that squad and got a lot more out of it and kind of utilised the best players in their best positions. But and we played great football, you know, we beat Italy and we had some great results. But the more that time went on, the more, you know, you get closer to that prize, don't you? And you kind of back away from what you want to do in trying to hold on to what you have. And you just got a bit lost in the end. And I feel the same way with Granger, in that she's come in, she wanted to play this front foot. Eventually, we lost our solidity at the back. Then we went from four at the back against Germany away, which is a mad decision, got battered. And then, of course, she shifted to five at the back for the next game. We just seemed like she was lost in herself as well. And I think when you put all of those things together, it's a bit of an odd combination.
Strikes me as a good analogy, actually, David, because the conservative nature of how Hughes played in those two games against the playoffs, Russians, yeah. it's actually the playoff games. It's actually, there is an analogy there. It's interesting.
But there we go. We wish her luck. I will finish by saying this one thing. I think it is interesting that whilst there's a few surprised faces around and about, I don't think there's anyone heartbroken either. And I'm not glad she's gone by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm not heartbroken. And I think that tells its own story in my view. Ruth, one of the things we wanted to talk about was some fringe players. We've got a big squad announcement coming up, not a million miles from now, ahead of that big game in March against Finland. I thought it would be a good time to kind of look at some of these players who maybe are on the verge of getting into the squad or have been in the squad before and have missed out recently that we may have forgotten about. So I just thought it might be good to mention some of them. I gave you a list of six. Have you got any additions to that list, Ruth?
Well, I think it might be worth sort of establishing who we think are the players that will make the squad, but probably aren't in our main, maybe thinking of the sort of starting 13, 14. So I think people like Josh Sheehan, Broadhead, Cullen, Bradshaw, Wes Burns, now he seems to be fit and healthy again with Ipswich, I think I'm seeing them as definite members of the squad, even though they might not be in our starting lineup. And I think then there's another, I mean, you've got half a dozen names. I think Luke Harries I might add to the list compared to who you've put in. But let's go through your list and then we can have a look at some extras that I might come up with.
The one I wanted to start with really is Isaac Davis, who's playing out in Belgium, Kortrijk, I think that's how you say it. He's played. I've clicked on the wrong one. Hang on. Whoa. He's played 16 games out in the Jupiler Pro League here, which is not a massively high standard, but it's definitely not as poor a standard, I think, as some people would make out. He's played 16 times. He scored 4 goals, and again, I recognise those aren't huge numbers. But he's scoring goals against good sides, Standard Liège, Cercle Bruges, that Matondo used to play for, Club Bruges as well. And he's also scoring those goals in a poor side. He's playing regular football all the time. And it just made me wonder a little bit, you know, he scored more goals this season in 16 games than he has in 38 games in the Championship for Cardiff, where he scored 3. So I just wonder if he's someone we need to kind of look at getting involved, because he's someone who's playing regular football. He's scoring goals relatively regularly. You know, 1 in 4, okay, it's not, you know, setting the world alight, but it's still decent. And I was wondering if he's someone we need to bring on to kind of change a game, you know, to grab a goal, who's got a bit of, you know, experience, a bit of an unknown as well, if he might be someone who'd be worth bringing into the squad.
Not sure I'd necessarily bring him in ahead of someone like Mark Harries or Reuben Colwell, but I think someone like him, who has been so embedded in the age group systems and is so used to being part of the Welsh setup, I think we actually discussed this previously, and I'm trying to remember who it was about, but I can see some merit in bringing these players that have aged out just into the odd camp, to make them feel that they remain part of the system and they remain part of the thinking. And maybe it's just your 27th player if you're naming 26, and I don't see any harm in that. But I think there might be some merit in almost every camp is bringing someone who's, as we said, aged out of the 21s and is still probably finding their way at a club level. But I think it's good for their ego, it's good for their development to remain... to remain within the system and to be acknowledged as still having a place in the system. So I think if I was going to be bringing him in, I'd be bringing him in more on that premise than necessarily for what he's doing on the pitch currently.
I mean, my counter-argument to that would be, we're not exactly blessed with goal scorers. I know we've got Bradshaw and we've got Broadhead, to be fair, is playing well this season. But, I mean... You know, Harries is someone else you mentioned there. Yes, he's in. You know, he's scored a couple of goals this year. I think he's got 6 in League One this year and 3 assists, which is pretty good. But he's also playing in League One, whereas Davis is playing top flight football somewhere. And yes, I know you can argue about the divisions there, but I think that makes a difference. I also think that. Well, one thing that we haven't done here for a long, long time is that we used to see happen quite often, which is bring in new people, as you said there, about getting people in the squad and making them feel a part of it. And that is true, and that is something. But I also think if you look at our strikers, you know, like Kiefer Moore's barely playing. We've got a lot of other people who are really not able to contribute much in a goal-scoring sense. And I think it would be important to have someone like this to have an opportunity. I wouldn't be upset if it was Mark Harris either, to be totally honest with you. But I think I think one of those two, in my opinion, needs to come into the squad, even if it is for the playoffs, even if it is, as you say, to be the 27th person. But I think those people need to be in and around it. And the fact that Davis has gone somewhere and is playing football abroad is also a great experience for him, and I think that sort of, you know, variety and diversity of experience in our squad, I think would be really, really important looking forward.
I don't disagree with that. I just think we're probably more likely to see Mark Harris than we are to see Isaac Davies. I just the way things have structured previously.
The other ones I've got on my list are not real surprises, but people I wanted to mention, really. One of which is on a personal thing that I watched, I observed whilst I was at home. The other is Zorba Thomas, who seemed to have disappeared out of things, a few injury worries. I'm not really sure what the situation was with him. But of late, he's really coming back into his own and is doing well at Huddersfield. He scored and got an assist against Blackburn, got an assist against Plymouth on the weekend. He's really starting, I feel like, in the last couple of weeks to have a good little turn of form here at the right time. Is that someone we need to kind of consider bringing back in when you consider that, for example, David Brooks is not getting any game time at all, really, at Bournemouth?
I like Thomas's versatility. I think that makes him a real asset within a squad. He's having a good season. He's a bit of a bright spot in what has not been a great season for Huddersfield. You just wonder whether something is up given the camps that he's missed. You know, is there something we're not understanding here about the dynamic? But I'd have him in for his versatility. I think his energy and his adaptability and the different positions you can throw him on the field make him a real asset as a depth player in a squad. And so I would be including him for that reason.
I think he's had a bit of time playing up front this season, yeah, for Huddersfield as well, which again is really, really interesting. I think he's a good player to have as an option on the basis that, yeah, again, kind of people aren't playing often. I wanted to mention briefly Reece Norrington-Davies, who's come back from his injury now. He played, I think it was a cup game he played, not long ago. No, it was a Premier League game for Sheffield United. He came back, he played only a little bit. He was on the bench against Luton, played in the cup game and then played a minute against Manchester City as they lost 2-0. But first of all, just great to have him back. And I think with the difficulties around Lockyer, he's someone who I would really expect to see in the squad next time round.
I mean, I'm assuming that his time on the field develops over the next few weeks ahead of the squad being announced. I would hope to see him back. It might just be a little bit too soon if he's still barely getting time with Sheffield United. But I think it's just great to see him back after what was a really serious injury and the timing of which was heartbreaking for him. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if he's not included, but I think it would be because of how much playing time he's managed to get in over the next few weeks. If that's at a decent level, then I think we'll see him back in, because he's another one of those players who's incredibly versatile and really helps you from, you know, centre back all the way out to the left wing back role if you're really stuck.
Well, we're going to talk about the Aaron Ramsey dilemma, as I keep referring to later. So I think for me, he will certainly come back up there. The other one I wanted to mention was Reuben Colwill. He came into it, obviously went to the Euros and was kind of seen as this great white hope to a certain extent. And his injuries and a lot of that is growing pains and all that sort of stuff has hampered him. I went to watch Cardiff against Plymouth when I was back at home over Christmas on Boxing Day. And not the best game of football, but relatively entertaining. He was the best player on the pitch, I thought, until he got brought off. I think he was on for about 65 minutes. And he didn't score, didn't assist, but every time he got the ball, he really had a presence about him, moved the ball well and turned and ran at people and had that little bit of something about him that not many people have got. And I wonder if we're now going to start to see the best of him. And again, if he can come in and add some depth into that squad. Yeah, he's a young boy, but I think he's got something. Having seen him again firsthand, he's physically filled out as well, and he looks like he's got more about him. So I was wondering what you thought there, because I was really impressed with how he played in when I saw him then and when I've seen him since.
What role would you anticipate him as using him for then, Dave, based on that?
Well, in that game, he was played as sort of an attacking midfielder, a number 10, if you like. I quite like the idea, and again, I'll come to this probably later. I'm not suggesting he would start, but I think he is someone who could change a game, and I think we've got to be wary of the fact that Aaron Ramsey's fitness is going to be hit or miss. Yes, he looks like he's coming back, but we don't know, you know, what position he's going to be in to contribute come March. I just think he'd be a good person to have around the squad, because I also think he can play out wide if we want to play that system. He can play a little bit deeper as well, and offers a little bit more of an attacking, versatile option if we need that in somewhere to sit a bit more in midfield. So I just think I can see him in the short term playing as a 10 for us, but in the longer term, I think he can play sort of anywhere across midfield, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it might be that he's there if we still got doubts about Ramsey's fitness. Wilson, I think, is probably ahead of him in that role, would be my guess. But again, I can see it being a good depth player for the squad. You're reaching a point where we might be hitting that, you know, we'll pick 35 of them question again. but again, I also think it's important where a player has shown progression and development that is not ignored by an international manager as well. Even if you know you're not probably going to, you know, things would have to go pretty awry for you to play him. I think it's important that the fact that he's now back playing regularly for Cardiff, he's contributing, is acknowledged as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that contribution is important because, you know, to stick with it, the other person I wanted to mention is Raby Matondo. I feel like we talk about him like every 6 months on this sort of basis. But the reason I wanted to mention him is because he had his injury from September through to mid-November, really. And since he's come back then, playing for Rangers, he's the team have only been on the losing side once, which was against Celtic, and he didn't play. Every game he's played since then that he's been a part of, Rangers have won. Okay, he's not contributed a goal or assist in that time. He did before his injury. But I just feel like, again, he's someone who is playing, again, not every week. He's getting half an hour here and there. But he's someone who can come on, I think, and not necessarily in March, but impact a game and change a game. And I think it's important we don't turn our back on some of these options. Because, I don't think it's realistic to have him and Zorba Thomas, for example, in the squad. But I think it is important to have some of these unknowns, if you like, to an extent. Unknown is the wrong word. Like someone who's... unpredictable is the word I meant, sorry, not unknown, who can kind of do something and change something as a game goes on, which I don't think we have loads of those players. So I think it's important that we, you know, are aware of these teams who are playing, players who are playing in big teams and playing in, you know, top flight football sort of thing, who can maybe come in and contribute. And I do think someone like Zorba Thomas or Raby Matondo, I think it's worth having a look at them for March, because I do think they have that unpredictable nature where they might come on and do something and, you know, really impact a game.
Yeah, it's also just pleasing to see him like kind of getting some settled play and some settled involvement with the team. You forget how young he is. He's only 23.
Yeah, exactly.
And his club playing has been so scattered, you know, multiple teams in England, off to Germany, off to Belgium, now up in Scotland. I'm hoping the fact that he's, you know, into his second season with Rangers, is feeling a bit more at home, yeah, is feeling exactly. More part of the squad, is getting some time, obviously getting over his injury. I think he strikes me as one of those people that really just needs to settle somewhere and get adapted and feel part of the place and then be able to push forward with his play. And hopefully that's what we're seeing. Again, I'm not sure. I understand what you're saying about nobody quite knows what you're going to get out of him as an opposition, but I think that kind of applies to us as well. We don't quite know what we're going to get out of him. And whilst there are times when that might be advantageous, I'm not sure that's quite what we want for the playoffs. But it wouldn't surprise me either to see him in the squad, because I think what's happening up in Scotland is it warrants notice and it warrants acknowledgement. So again, it wouldn't surprise me to see him there. Whereas if we'd have seen him, well, obviously he was injured for part of the autumn, but if we'd have seen him last year, it would have seemed a little strange.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know. Like I say, I don't have all the answers, but I do think he's someone who's worth... but doing something different. I think that's, I personally think that's maybe what we need a little bit in March, is, you know, that bit of unpredictability. We don't need that across the whole squad, but we need something a bit different, because I do feel we're becoming a bit predictable. Is there anyone else you wanted to add on there or you wanted to mention?
I just wanted to mention Niall Huggins because of as you've mentioned, the situation with our central D is just a little bit all over the place. So I think he might be back in just from a coverage point of view. Yeah.
And you know, to be fair to the unwashed, despite getting annihilated by top flight opposition in the cup recently, they are having a reasonable season by their dreadful standards. So I think it's important. You know, he's obviously suffered some injuries himself. He's not been in the squad for a while, so that might be something which might hinder him coming back in. But we will very much wait and see. And as you say, those extra people we need to cover, I guess, for Lockyer. And I do think Norrington Davis might help kind of solve that problem to an extent.
But we will come on to that. Yeah.
We also wanted to mention, Ruth, the C International, which has been arranged again to be in Llanelli at Stevenage on... Oh, God, I've written it down and I can't find it.
It's the 19th of March.
The 19th of March. There you go. I can't remember if... I'm getting the games muddled up. I think I watched it last year in some pouring down rain and some kind of very sloppy conditions. But I do really like the idea of showcasing the Cymru Premier players who were, you know, to go up against these other non-league players and give them a real opportunity, obviously to represent Wales, but also to represent our national league as well.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great event, actually. I like the fact that they've been... When it's our turn to host them at home, we seem to have alternated between a South Wales location and a North Wales location. I don't know whether that's actually planned or is just how it's fallen out, but I think that has merit. As you said, I think it's a good way to showcase the league. I think it's a great reward for the players. I mean, just to be able to put on that red shirt and represent your country, regardless of what the level is, I think that's a huge achievement for them. And in fairness, all the games have been really exciting. And there was one that we won, was it 4-0? But otherwise, they've been a draw or a one team or other has taken it by a single goal. Yeah. And they've been eminently entertaining and watchable games, even, as you said, even in the pouring rain. So I just think it's a nice addition to the calendar. And I'd actually like to see it expanded a little bit. I wonder if there's scope for us to see if Scotland are interested in doing something similar, because I just think it's a nice format.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's quite a nice idea, actually. I don't know. I don't know. You know, if Noel Mooney's listening, I think he does listen from time to time. Get that, you know, put that one on your notepad. I think it's a great thing. And you know, I was having a bit of back and forth with someone on Twitter on the weekend about the Cymru Premier, because you know it's such a shame, because it's a great league this year, I think, but the top two are so far away from everyone else. TNS are miles ahead, and I think Coniskey Nomads are second, but I think they're about 10 or 12 points ahead of third place. The top part of the league is really kind of spread out, but it's a shame, real, because that looks like the headline, but the rest of the league is really tight, and the battle for the European playoffs is tight. Carnarvon Town having a great year, and it's not like there's one kind of dud team at the bottom of the league. There's three teams who were involved in that relegation scrap, and I think are separated by a point. Last minute goals on the weekend, heartbreak for Colwyn Bay, who were, I know Paul, who writes for us, was a bit devastated by that one, having equalised and then conceded, you know, almost immediately. So there's some great stuff out there, but I just think it's a shame that the teams at the top of the league, are kind of running away, because I think that gives a worse impression of the league than is actually true, ultimately. But I think this C International really helps promote the quality that we have in the Cymru Premier.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I don't know what we do about TNS and increasingly Connors Key, because, you know, you can't expect them not to be good teams for the sake of the rest of the league. But it doesn't help when a team has, you know, won 20 out of 22 and drawn the other two. It doesn't help your kind of credibility as a league. And it's just, you know, the money is talking at that point, and it's very difficult to see what we can do about it. And as you said, it's a pity, because actually there's some really nice competitive games going on around that. And it seems to get lost in the, as you said, the headline of TNS being just so dominant.
And I think to go with that, you know, there was someone, like, I'm looking for the name now, I can't find it, unfortunately, but someone who mentioned that they go and they said, you know, there's only 100 or so people, they're the best team in the league, and only 100 people are going to watch home games. You know, that's such a shame. And, you know, I think the interesting thing for them is, for TNS, they are playing Falkirk in the Welsh-Scottish Challenge Cup. The semi-final of that is coming up. Falkirk undefeated in 26, TNS undefeated in 25. The Welsh Dragon posting that stat on Twitter. So that's going to be an interesting game. And it certainly will make for an interesting contest. And I think those are the games that, you know, help the Cymru Premier in a sense in kind of growing its appeal. But obviously, if there's only 100 people watching the TNS game, then that does take the edge off. I did also, Ruth, want to mention, whilst I'm on the topic of the Cymru Premier, I'm reading a fantastic book at the moment, A League of Our Own by Mark Langshaw, which is released on the St. David's Press. Really interesting kind of tracking how the Cymru Premier developed, the opening sections talking about the Irate Eight and all the difficulties that were had trying to encourage these teams into the Cymru Premier, the difficulties that they found starting it, and the teams that played in the English leagues coming across, and how the team had grown. For example, I had no idea that Nigel Adkins, who went on to manage Southampton, used to be the Bangor manager and won two consecutive leagues in a row in the mid-90s. So it's a really interesting read. We're hoping to get Mark Langshaw on to talk about it. But for anyone who has an interest in the Cymru Premier League, Mark covers it really, really well from 1992 through to 2022. It's a 22-23 season, sorry. But yeah, it's a really fantastic book and a great read. So I would very much recommend, if you have an interest in the history of the Cymru Premier, to get involved and have a look at that. Ruth, the main thing I wanted us to talk about, he says, although the podcast is currently 42 minutes old, is the Aaron Ramsey dilemma. It looks like he'll be fit for March, but does he start is the key question to that. I guess my ultimate question is, what makes that decision for Rob Page? Because I wonder if actually Kiefer Moore makes that decision for Rob Page, depending on how he's playing, or if he's playing for that matter.
I actually think, assuming Ramsey's back playing for Cardiff, how he is playing for Cardiff and what's going on there, and whether he seems to be dependable in terms of the minutes he can give. Because another thing we've got to consider is those two games are pretty close, and we don't do well in, you know, must win back to back games. We haven't got a great track record in that.
True.
So I think ultimately it will depend on what can we expect for Aaron Ramsey based on what he has been producing for Cardiff by that point. You know, if he's doing 80 minutes regularly and is contributing and is playing as he was at the start of the season for them, then I think it's very difficult not to include him, because he can change a game. But if it's, he's barely back, he's only getting a few minutes, it's, you know, it's clear he's kind of still building, it's almost like pre-season sort of what's going on, then I don't think we can have him other than on the bench and perhaps coming on with 15, 20 minutes to go in the hope of pulling something around. It's difficult to know, isn't it? Because there's an interesting kind of model with a striker and two clear wingers, whether that's Johnson and James or some other combination, that kind of sort of feels like it makes sense. But our delivery of it, our ability to make something happen with that, seems a bit variable, really. I'm at a quandary, because I think Kiefer Moore's lack of game time is a real concern. He's played, I think it's about 10 minutes in league games since October. Admittedly, he was part of their third-round FA Cup win over QPR and scored in that game as well. So it's... I don't know, because I still think we're more likely to score with him on the field than not. And I think they're games we've got to win. You know, you can't eke out a draw. It's not going to help. They're games we've got to win. So I'm really torn. I think my fundamental hope is that he gets a transfer in this next couple of weeks. Yeah. and goes somewhere and gets some game time, basically. And then that hopefully kind of makes the decision for us in that sense.
Well, I wonder if the decision that needs to be made is actually more about Brennan Johnson, to be honest. Because I've been thinking, ultimately, I think the way we're going at the minute, we have to play Dan James. He's in fantastic form. He scored again on the weekend. I watched Man United Tottenham yesterday. Brennan Johnson played, didn't score or get an assist, but was a real threat. They actually switched their fullbacks round to Wan-Bissaka, so that Wan-Bissaka had to deal with the pace of Brennan Johnson. Didn't do a particularly good job of it either. So he has to play. James has to play, which means that realistically either Moore has to play there with him, or if we're desperate to get Ramsey on, Ramsey plays as that false nine. Because I just don't see that we can carry him as a 10, because we surely have to play the other two. So therefore, you know, the alternative is either play him instead of James in midfield, which we know is not going to work, or we play three in midfield and play the two up front, which is Moore and someone else. So I wonder if we're looking at it the wrong way, I guess, is that we've got to try and accommodate the other players in their best positions, because that is where we're going to get our most joy, I think. And I think if we don't do that, I think we're putting ourselves in a real tricky position, because we'll then, I worry that we'll end up needing to chase the game. I'm talking myself down a rabbit hole here, but I do wonder what comes next here in this sense, because we haven't got the best out of Brennan Johnson. That has to be the key here for me in these March games. And I worry that if we don't do something that fits him in his best sense, then that's a huge wasted opportunity. And I think the thing that gets him playing in his best way probably means Aaron Ramsey doesn't play, or doesn't start at least.
Johnson's the dilemma, I think. He's continues to underperform at international level. If you looked at what's happening at club level, you'd have to include him. And then you don't want to miss out on Dan James, because he seems to be in the best form that he's probably been in for 2 or 3 years. They need a striker, because I don't think you can ask either of them to play in that role. And then that's your front three taken care of, whether it's Kiefer Moore, or you put in Nathan Broadhead, or you put in Tom Bradshaw. I think if you're playing James and Johnson, you need a more dedicated striker. I don't think either of them are genuine goal scorers in quite the way we need. And then if you've got a combination of those three up front, you have two holding midfielders, which we have to have.
Yeah.
And assuming you're playing five at the back, that's your 10 outfield players taken care of. You've backed yourself into a corner where that's your option. I mean, we can't not play Jordan James. We can't not play Ethan Ampadu. God, I love Leeds. I mean, what they're doing with Rodden and Ampadu and James at the minute. Thank God for Leeds United in terms of our international players getting
sentences I never thought I'd say, but well done, Leeds.
Some game time. I mean, they've obviously cottoned on to Ampadu's leadership potential. They've started having him as captain in several games. It's just like they're saving our bacon at the minute, frankly. I don't want to kind of commit. I mean, I'm not talking about committing, but I think it's too open a question at the minute until we really have some idea what Ramsey's playing like by the time we get to March. But I think at the minute I'd still be playing Kiefer Moore, because I just think we make a better job of scoring goals with him there.
I think you might be right. To go back to the Johnson thing, I mean, I think the real issue there is that he is not... I think the reason we're not getting the best out of him is because he's not being played in his best position. I think that's the biggest part of the problem, and until we try and accommodate him in the way we did Bale to an extent, I don't think it kind of, the other stuff almost doesn't matter. I think you end up talking yourself into, I don't think it actually matters how well Ramsey's play. And I think our team has evolved to the point that as a starting 11, I don't think he starts. The only alternative I could see was if we go back to that box midfield and start Wilson on one side and Ramsey on the other of that kind of midfield four. But then that's just one person up front, which is Johnson, and you know, we know that that doesn't suit him. So I think that it will be, I personally think that is what will happen, is that we will play all four of them in midfield, play Johnson up front because he's playing every week, unless Moore gets a move somewhere, and then that's what we'll do. And it just, I don't think that benefits anyone. I don't think Ramsey's in his best position. I don't think Wilson's in his best position. I don't think Johnson's in his best position, relying on other people then to contribute in this attacking sense. And I'm not sure that's where our strength lies. So I do have that concern, I'll be honest. But yeah, for me, I feel like we might be at a point now where Ramsey might have played himself out of it just because of his injury worries. But I don't know. There's, as you say, I suppose there are too many variables. It's classic circumstance here, Ruth, where we have where we've asked ourselves a question and seem completely incapable of answering it. But I think that I think that tells you a lot. One last thing that on that is Simon Owens has sent us a message and says, does Page go with club form players like James and Johnson or stick to his tried and trusted lads who had no minutes, Brooks and Moore? Brooks is the one that's interesting there, because there's a lot of chat that he might be going to Southampton in the January transfer window. Mepham to Sheffield United. A lot of chat that Danny Ward might be going somewhere. Even Connor Roberts might be moving on from Burnley as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few windows. Normally, Ruth, we talk at this point about people needing a move somewhere, but I think probably Brooks and Moore are the only two people who we'd say, and Ward, I suppose. But those are the big ones we'd say. They're the only ones who kind of need a move.
Brooks, it's difficult to know. Does he, you know, is there a role still for him there? He just needs developing.
Yeah.
Moore, I think, has always been a slightly sort of square peg in a round hole at Bournemouth a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't blame him for moving to a Premiership tie, but he would always be, you know, a substitute there, really. So I think he's got the question whether he wants more first team roles, first team responsibility. The goalkeeping one is interesting. I think we've kind of muddled through for so long without having a starting goalkeeper. I don't think it's a decision that Ward, for argument's sake, would be making with international football in mind. I think he needs to decide whether he's just prepared to remain third or fourth choice. At that club, and you know, does he want to do something about it? And he may be comfortable enough and happy enough. That's what he's looking for.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? And lots of unanswerable questions at this particular stage in the game. Great podcasting material, as always, from us.
They are by definition unanswerable. But I think it's reflective of where we are as a sort of Red Wall community. Is we've kind of got, we're kind of close to having it sorted, but we haven't, it's not sorted, it's not clear, there isn't a definitive. I think when we were able to, for want of a better expression, indulge and basically give Gareth Bale kind of roaming rights, the other 10 players were pretty set. And we were also had players that were playing regularly, and they were playing at a really decent level of football. Most of them were Premiership players, and if not, they were at the higher end of the Championship.
Yeah.
And I think there was a kind of reliability to that group of players that meant we could give Bale carte blanche. And unfortunately, at the minute, we're not there with the rest of the team to give Johnson carte blanche. And I think that's where we're evolving at the moment. How can we utilise our best players but still have some solidity? And that clearly means we need Jordan James and Ampadu doing what they're doing. And then by definition, you've got a very limited number of like front players, and it's how to shoehorn in the right combination of people there. And it's a question that's still very open.
I mean, my alternative view, were I to present one, would be the system that gets everyone on our, all the best players on our pitch would be some level of 4-3-3. And obviously we don't want to play four at the back because we assume to be wide open at the back. Could the question be, should we be coached in a better way which allows us to play four at the back, not be so wide open defensively, and still get our best players on the pitch? That would be now there's a question for another podcast, Ruth. But I wonder if that's also a question that's worth asking, if maybe, you know, because I think realistically, if we play five, if we commit to playing five at the back, if that's what we're saying we're doing, then one of our best players or one of our most informed players, depending on how you want to point the finger at them, of Ramsey, James, Moore, Johnson, one of those has to miss out realistically. So I wonder if, you know, longer term, maybe some better coaching might allow us to be a better team in transition and defend better and play better when we don't have the ball. Maybe that's the real answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in this dilemma where our best defensive wing players are wing backs, whereas we might not necessarily have a clear cut left back, right back within our setup. And maybe when Reece Norrington Davies comes back, maybe he is, you know, a threat to Nico in that sense, that he's that little bit more steady, but contributes less going forward. But if you've moved to a 4-3-3, then perhaps you don't need it. So I think there's a bit of a chicken and egg here as well of who have we got and how can we play them, yeah, versus what might suit us holistically and that sort of thing. So I think it's a dilemma. I would love us to play a 4-3-3. I think our adventurous, interesting players are further up the field and we haven't got enough spots for them. But that's no good if we're leaking goals at the back. So, you know, you've got the horses for courses at the minute, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think, you know, I always love a Newcastle analogy. It is very much Newcastle United-esque at the minute, where we seem to be scoring goals.
Here we go, folks.
I know. I'll make it quick, don't worry. But we're scoring goals against Liverpool and Chelsea and Manchester United. And Manchester City, in fact, scored two crackers against them the other day. But we're also conceding goals for fun, and I that's the balance, because we do play a 4-3-3. If Wales did that, I'd imagine we'd be the same. We'd score two but concede three. So I do recognise there's a balance required, but yeah, I mean, we've said for long enough now that the solution is five at the back, and that is true, but I do really wonder if that the reason for that is because we're not being managed in an effective enough way. But anyway, that is, as I say, a rabbit hole we can go down at another time. as we rattle on to the hour mark, Ruth, is there anything else you would like to add today?
No, I think that's good. That's a good spot to round up an hour. Thank you for listening, folks.
Yeah, I feel like even by our standards, this has been quite waffly by nature. But there you go. I've enjoyed it. That's the important thing. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back relatively soon, I hope. There's some interesting stuff coming up. Obviously, the Sea Internationals, as we say, we're not a million miles from the playoffs. It'll be great to see if Wales appoint a new manager for the women's team as well. So a lot of stuff to kind of get our eyes on. We've also got a few interviews, hopefully, lined up, Ruth. I don't want to say too many names in case they backtrack as I've outed them live on air, but hopefully we will get some big names on to talk about Welsh football very soon as well. Thank you very much for your time, Ruth.
You're welcome. Nice to catch up.
Absolutely. Up the Welsh. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gents. Please feel free to support us by going to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman Street. Equally, you can support us by going to bagsybags.com and using the code CHAD10 at checkout, which gives you a 10% discount and in turn helps support us keep this podcast free. We love doing this, but it is not free. So any help and support we can get to keep it free for you and not too expensive for us would be very gratefully received. So please do consider getting yourself something at bagsybags.com or going to buymeacoffee.com/Coleman Street, where you can support us there. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back very, very soon. Good night.
Bye-bye.